Lesson 20. What does friendship mean to you? Text A. Mr. Brooks, Martin, Robert and Jean are being interviewed on the subject of friendship. I consider friendship to be one of the most important things in life, whatever your status, married or single. I see too many lonely people around. A lot of us get so involved with material values, family problems, keeping up with the Joneses, etc., that we forget the real meaning of friendship.
Which is what, according to you?
They say, a friend in need is a friend indeed, which is partly true, but a real friend should also be able to share your happy moments without feeling jealous. A good friendship is one where you accept and forgive faults, understand moods, and don't feel hurt if a friend doesn't feel like seeing you. Of course, honesty is an essential part of any relationship. We should learn to accept our friends for what they are.
As a married man, do you find your friendships are only with other men?
Of course not. Both my wife and I have men and women friends, thank goodness. Although family life is fulfilling, it isn't enough. Both my wife and I get tremendous satisfaction from our friends, married and single, male and female. And we both have our separate friends too. We'd get bored with each other if we had the same friends.
You must have a full life.
We certainly do. And, as I say, our friends give us a lot of pleasure. After all, friends should not be people with whom you kill time. Real friendship, in my opinion, is a spiritually developing experience.
How important are friends to you, Martin?
I've never had a lot of friends. I've never regarded them as particularly important. Perhaps that's because I come from a big family, 2 brothers and 3 sisters, and lots of cousins. And that's what's really important to me, my family, the different members of my family. If you really need help, you get it from your family, don't you? Well, at least that's what I've always found.
What about you, Jean? To me, friendship, having friends, people I know I can really count on, to me that's the most important thing in life. It's more important even than love. If you love someone, you can always fall out of love again, and that can lead to a lot of hurt feelings, bitterness, and so on. But a good friend is a friend for life. And what exactly do you mean by a friend? Well, I've already said, someone you know you can count on. I suppose what I really mean is, let's see, how am I going to put this? It's someone who will help you if you need help, who'll listen to you when you talk about your problems. Someone who you can trust. What do you mean by a friend, Robert?
Someone who likes the same things that you do. Who you can argue with and not lose your temper, even if you don't always agree about things. I mean, someone who you don't have to talk to all the time, but can be silent with, perhaps. That's important, too. You can just sit together and not say very much sometimes. Just relax. I don't like people who talk all the time.
Are you very good at keeping in touch with your friends if you don't see them regularly?
No, not always. I've lived in lots of places, and, to be honest, once I move away, I often do drift out of touch with my friends. And I'm not a very good letter writer, either. Never have been. But I know that if I saw those friends again, if I ever moved back to the same place, or for some other reason we got back into close contact again, I'm sure the friendship would be just as strong as it was before.
Several of my friends have moved away, got married, things like that. One of my friends has had a baby recently, and I'll admit, I don't see her or hear from her as much as I used to. She lives in another neighbourhood, and when I phone her, she always seems busy, but that's an exception. I write a lot of letters to my friends, and get a lot of letters from them. I have a friend I went to school with, and 10 years ago she emigrated to Canada, but she still writes to me every month, and I write to her just as often.
Text B. A friend in need of help. You and Sol have been friends for over 15 years. You went to high school together and now work in the same company. For the past several months, Sol has been very irritable and at times has shown his emotions by openly criticizing the company and some of his fellow workers. Most of the people in the office know that he sometimes drinks too much when he feels depressed about some of his personal and family problems. But recently, Sol made a very nasty personal comment which hurt one of the people in the office. No one said anything to him, but it was obvious that many people were angry at what he said and now have little sympathy for him. You're beginning to wonder whether you should say something to Sol. You don't consider him your best friend, but he might possibly lose his job because you didn't try to help him. On the other hand, you don't know whether Sol would think that you were interfering in his private life by talking about his personal problems. What would you do in this situation? Additional information. In fact, studies of friendship seem to implicate more complex factors. For example, one function friendship seems to fulfill is that it supports the image we have of ourselves and confirms the value of the attitudes we hold. Certainly, we appear to project ourselves onto our friends. Several studies have shown that we judge them to be more like us than they objectively are. This suggests that we ought to choose friends who are similar to us, birds of a feather, rather than those who would be complementary, opposites attract, a prediction which is supported by empirical evidence, at least so far as attitudes and beliefs are concerned. In one experiment, some developing friendships were monitored against first-year students living in the same hostel. It was found that similarity of attitudes towards politics, religion and ethics, pastimes and aesthetics, was a good predictor of what friendships would be established by the end of 4 months, though it had less to do with initial alliances, not surprisingly, since attitudes may not be obvious on first inspection. There have also been studies of pairings, both voluntary, married couples, and forced, student roommates, to see which remained together and which split up. Again, the evidence seems to favor similarity rather than complementarity as an omen of a successful relationship, though there is a complication. Where marriage is concerned, once the field has been narrowed down to potential mates who come from similar backgrounds and share a broad range of attitudes and values, a degree of complementarity seems to become desirable. When a couple are not just similar but almost identical, something else seems to be needed. Similarity can breed contempt. It has also been found that when we find others obnoxious, we dislike them more if they are like us than when they are dissimilar. The difficulty of linking friendship with similarity of personality probably reflects the complexity of our personalities. We have many facets and therefore require a disparate group of friends to support us. This, of course, can explain why we may have two close friends who have little in common and indeed dislike each other. By and large, though, it looks as though we would do well to choose friends and spouses who resemble us. If this were not so, computer dating agencies would have gone out of business years ago. Lesson 21. Why are they so unlucky? Text A. I wonder why so many shop assistants are so foul-tempered. In spite of so many campaigns to improve the services in the past years, we see no appreciable change so far. If Dad and Mum are to be believed, the services used to be quite good in the 50s. But then, they always say everything used to be good in the 50s. I find the older people grow, the more nostalgic they become. Now, Granny never lets a day go by without reminiscing on the good old things in the good old days. Once, when she saw Xiao Hong and me eating some mooncakes with relish, she said pityingly, "You poor children, you don't know what real mooncakes taste like. The worst in the old days tasted much better than the best that money can buy nowadays." We burst out laughing, not taking her words seriously. Now, to come back to the bad service in shops and department stores, people often say that when you buy something, you are spending money to buy rudeness and anger. Today I saw a man doing exactly that. I was at a department store and I happened to witness a typical quarrel. I was next to a counter selling tea, and I saw an elderly man come up and ask a young woman who was busy weighing and wrapping tea into standard size packs, "Do you have very good green tea?" The woman glanced up to size him up. He was ordinarily dressed and spoke with a provincial accent, obviously a man of no consequence. She went on with her work, and the man had to repeat his question. After another pause, the woman snorted out, "Yes, 26 yuan a liang." Not believing his ears, the man tried to correct her. "You mean 26 yuan a jin?" Upon this, the woman flared up and shouted, "I said 26 yuan a liang! Can't you hear straight? If you want a jin, then it's 260 yuan. Is that clear?" The man seemed to be stunned by her sudden outburst, but he kept his temper and asked again, "Do you have something under 2 yuan a liang?" Obviously she was making things difficult for the old man, for she answered as rudely as before, "What do you mean under 2 yuan? Anything from 1 cent to 1 yuan, 99 cents is under 2 yuan. I don't remember what exactly the man said, but somehow he managed to find out there was a kind costing 1 yuan 96 a liang. "Can you show it to me?" "Do you want to buy it or not?" "Well, I want to look at the leaves and smell the flavour first." "You can look, smell, eat, drink, or do whatever you like with it at home. Here I only sell tea. If you want to buy it, buy it. If you can't afford it, don't come here to waste people's time. Obviously you don't know what is proper in Beijing." "Look here, young lady, it's you who don't know what is proper. I have been living in Beijing long before you were born, and I've never seen anyone as rude as you are. Your job is to serve the customers, not to insult them. Now, for the last time, are you going to show me the tea or not?" "And for the last time, I am telling it to you. Either buy it or get out of here. I know the likes of you. You want something good, and yet grudge the money you have to spend on it. This is insufferable. Who is in charge here? I want to see your head." "My head? It's on my shoulders. Take a good look if you want to." The old man went away fuming. "I've got down your number. I'll write to the Evening News." The threat didn't seem to frighten the girl. At most, she'll have to make a self-criticism, which costs her nothing. Even if she should lose a month's bonus, it is only a few yuan. But if she could be sacked, I bet she wouldn't dare be so rude and aggressive. Text B. All the housewives who went to the new supermarket had one great ambition: to be the lucky customer who did not have to pay for her shopping. For this was what the notice just inside the entrance promised. It said, "Remember, once a week, one of our customers gets free goods. This may be your lucky day." For several weeks, Mrs. Edwards hoped, like many of her friends, to be the lucky customer. Unlike her friends, she never gave up hope. The cupboards in her kitchen were full of things which she did not need. In vain her husband tried to dissuade her. She dreamed of the day when the manager of the supermarket would approach her and say, "Madam, this is your lucky day. Everything in your basket is free." One Friday morning, after she had finished her shopping and had taken it to her car, she found that she had forgotten to buy any tea. She dashed back to the supermarket, got the tea, and went towards the cash desk. As she did so, she saw the manager of the supermarket approach her. "Madam," he said, holding out his hand, "I want to congratulate you. You are our lucky customer, and everything you have in your basket is free." Additional information. Three times, a man in his early 30s approached Shen Limin's clothes counter in the Beihua garment store on busy Shidan Street in central Beijing. The first time, Shen showed him the various garments. He left but returned a while later and stood there staring at a skirt. Then he went away again, but came back after a few minutes. Curious, Shen asked, "Why don't you buy that skirt since you love it so much?" The man said that he really wanted to, but the 198 yuan price was too much for him. She suggested that he choose something cheaper, but he replied that the skirt was what his wife would like most. They started talking, and he told her he bought his wife a gift every year in celebration of their wedding anniversary. Shen was so moved that she offered the skirt to him for 130 yuan, the wholesale price. When the man hesitated in surprise, she told him, "I do that simply because you are a good husband." As a divorcee, Shen, 35, spoke from the depths of her heart. She could not imagine any husband being so considerate or tender. Her failure in marriage and her divorce 3 years ago scared her away from men and prompted her to resign from her job as a log keeper in a film studio and become a self-employed garment seller. What makes Shen unusual is that she makes money to help deserted kids. Her love of children, and her sympathy for the wretched stemmed from the day her 6-year-old younger brother was crushed to death in a mishap in a warehouse near her home. Her sympathetic nature kept her marriage together for 7 years. Her husband had been a clarinet player in an army band. A go-between had introduced them. One cold, snowy night, they decided to get married. He had been walking her home and kept darting into shops. She grew impatient, thinking he was merely wanting to buy cigarettes, and she stomped off. But he ran after her and presented her with a gauze mask he had bought for her to help keep out the cold. His thoughtfulness moved her to tears. He said that perhaps they should break up since she could not understand him. "I will marry you if that can atone for my mistake," Shen said, she responded. And so the matter was sealed. The death of a bosom friend 7 years later marked the beginning of the end for Shen and her husband. As the friend lay dying of heart disease, 20 days after giving birth to a son, a pregnancy she had risked because her husband was the only son of his family, she asked Shen to care for the child. Shen promised she would, even though she had a son of her own. Her husband was strongly opposed, however. Still, Shen would often go to see the child who was living in his grandmother's home. "I felt guilty when I saw the child wearing dirty clothes," Shen said. "I thought the child would not have been like that had his mother been alive." When the grandparents decided to send the boy to friends in Tianjin, Shen wanted to adopt him. Her husband then moved out and said he wanted a divorce. Shen went to Tianjin to look for the child and found him, but the family refused to give the boy up. Shen would not leave until she was convinced the child was being kindly treated and properly cared for. Her years of marriage had given Shen a comfortable lifestyle, but that was all, she said. The divorce made her realize she had feelings and ambitions again. Shen had once dreamed of becoming a film actress and tried out for roles, but only ended up with bit parts. She fared better on the stage with amateur troupes, but her dreams were shattered when she was refused admission to a professional art school because of her age. She was too old to learn how to act, she was told. Now, dreams filled the void of her disappointment. She turned to helping children. She wrote to the SOS village in Tianjin, a home for orphan children, applying for a job as a nurse. But she was turned down because she had a son. She still wanted to help children, but did not know how. Finding a way to make money became a practical and urgent problem. Early last year, she started her own business as a clothing dealer, setting up a stall in West Beijing. Her mother did not like the idea and felt it would be bad for her grandson to be brought up in such an environment. She threatened to smash the stall, but gradually Shen won her over. "I don't want my son to follow my example," she said. "I expect a lot of him." She still maintains contact with her friend's son in Tianjin. She moved to Xidan this summer when the new Beihua garment store opened. She now has 2 assistants, one of them a university graduate. Shen said that her business life has made her a different woman, one who is independent and full of confidence. Friends try to get her to date, but she's not interested. At first, she said, her distaste of marriage or love affairs was so strong that she cut her hair short and wore men's clothes. "I am afraid of falling in love," Shen said with a bitter smile. She doubts whether she could be a good wife, saying she would be better as a friend or companion. Many of her customers have become friends. To one frequent caller, she is Sister Shen. "I really love my customers," Shen said. "I do my business for the sake of love." Lesson 22. Tell us about your hobbies. Text A. What I like most, I suppose, is the fact that it's so unusual. I mean, when I tell people what I do, they just look at me usually as if I'm mad. Maybe I am. Anyway, what I do is this. I get up at about 6:15 every morning.
I leave my wife in bed because she's not as mad as me, and I put my trunks on under my tracksuit and drive down to the park with my clothes in a case. It only takes about 5 minutes because there's no traffic, of course, at that time in the morning. So, when I get there, I leave the car in the car park and run round a bit. I usually run for about 10 minutes till I'm nice and warm. Then comes the interesting bit. I run over to the car, get my case, and then over to the pool. I take my tracksuit off and in I jump. It's pretty cold, I can tell you, especially in the middle of winter, but I do a couple of quick lengths, and then I climb out, get changed, and drive home. I just get back in time for breakfast, and I normally feel I've earned it too. Well, it's very detailed work, you see, but I find it very relaxing. It's strange, I suppose, that something like this, where you have to concentrate a lot, can be relaxing. But you see, in my job, I'm always making decisions and telling people what to do, but I never actually see what I've done. This is completely different. You see, here I'm actually making something myself. I start with a kite. Usually it's got all the basic materials in it. Then you have to cut out all the shapes from the wood and stick them together. When you've made the frame, the wings, and the fuselage, that is, you cover them with special paper and paint. Of course, if it's going to fly properly, everything has to be properly balanced, you know. I must say, really, though, I think I enjoy actually making them more than flying them.
Well, in a sense, I suppose I do it to save money. I mean, things are so incredibly expensive in the shops nowadays, aren't they? But that's not the only reason, really. No, the beautiful thing is that you can make what you want, when you want, and in material you've chosen. I mean, you don't have to depend on some Paris designer to say what is fashionable. If you like an idea, you see, then of course you can copy it. But it gives you much more independence to do it yourself. I mean, obviously, it takes time, but I enjoy it. And with a sewing machine, it doesn't take all that long to make even quite complicated things. And then, finally, you know that you've got something really unique, especially if it's something you've designed yourself.
Well, it gives me the chance to be alone. And for me, that's really the most important thing, I suppose, after being with crowds of people all week. It gives you time to think, you know. And another thing is that it gets me out of doors. I suppose it isn't very energetic, really, after all. I mean, you don't do very much except just sit there, but at least it's in the fresh air. And that's more than you can say for things like darts, isn't it? No, that's really what I like about it. I like having time to think in the open air. I'm not terribly keen on the man against animal bit. You know, man, the hunter against nature. No, actually, I don't usually catch very many, you know. And if I do, I always throw them straight back.
Text B. What's on the telly this evening? I feel like relaxing.
Why ask me that? You know I never watch it.
Too busy with the latest hobby, are you? What is it this time? Knitting socks for your nephews? Or collecting buttons? I wish I had as much free time as you do.
Men, as a matter of fact, you probably have more than I do. But you waste it all watching your telly.
That's not a waste of time. I've got to rest sometimes.
Sometimes, maybe. But not all the time. And anyway, I relax with my hobbies. A change is as good as a rest.
Well, the telly's my hobby, and I learn a lot from it.
But it doesn't teach you to do anything, does it? You just sit there and stare at it. That's not learning.
But I do learn. There are lots of educational programs.
But you don't watch them, do you? Whenever an educational program comes on, you either switch over to the other channel or go to sleep.
When I come home from work, I need to put my feet up, at least for a while. Life's not all work, you know.
Hobbies aren't work, Jeff. I like putting my feet up, too, at the end of the day. But I like doing things while I rest. Life's too short for us to waste time.
Mary, dear, as I've said many times, we're different. There are two kinds of people in the world.
I know. Those who are never happy unless they're running about doing things.
That's right. And those who are never happy unless they're doing nothing. I'm one of the latter, and you...
I know, dear. I'm one of the former. I'm proud of it.
So now we agree. Live and let live. You can go peacefully back to your button collection, and I can watch TV.
If only you organised yourself better. There's so much you could do, really. You're wasting your talents. And one last thing. I'm not collecting buttons.
What are you doing, then? Making sculptures from potatoes?
No. I'm learning how to make Turkish cakes. And the first ones came out very well. Of course, if you're too tired, I won't insist on you trying them.
Additional information. A hobby can be almost anything a person likes to do in his spare time. Hobbyists raise pets, build model ships, weave baskets, or carve soap figures. They watch birds, hunt animals, climb mountains, raise flowers, fish, ski, skate, and swim. Hobbyists also paint pictures, attend concerts and plays, and perform on musical instruments. They collect everything from books to butterflies and from shells to stamps. People take up hobbies because these activities offer enjoyment, friendship, knowledge, and relaxation. Sometimes they even yield financial profit. Hobbies help people relax after periods of hard work and provide a balance between work and play. Hobbies also offer interesting activities for persons who have retired. Anyone, rich or poor, old or young, sick or well, can follow a satisfying hobby, regardless of his age, position, or income. Hobbies can help a person's mental and physical health. Doctors have found that hobbies are valuable in helping patients recover from physical or mental illness. Hobbies give bedridden or wheelchair patients something to do, and provide interests that keep them from thinking about themselves. Many hospitals treat patients by having them take up interesting hobbies or pastimes. In early times, most people were too busy making a living to have many hobbies. But some persons who had leisure did enjoy hobbies. The ancient Egyptians played games with balls made of wood, pottery, and papyrus. Some Greeks and Romans collected miniature soldiers. People today have more time than ever before for hobbies. Machines and automation have reduced the amount of time they must spend on their jobs. Hobbies provide variety for workers who do the same monotonous tasks all day long. More people are retiring than ever before, and at an earlier age. Those who have developed hobbies never need to worry about what to do with their newly found leisure hours. Sir William Osler, a famous Canadian doctor, expressed the value of hobbies by saying, "No man is really happy or safe without a hobby, and it makes precious little difference what the outside interest may be. Botany, beetles, or butterflies, roses, tulips, or irises, fishing, mountaineering, or antiques, anything will do so long as he straddles the hobby and rides it hard."
听力课堂，欢迎你。
听力课堂，欢迎你。
听啊，点儿看。